The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following program is sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.
Welcome to From the Median, a daily report from the front line of the pro-life movement, discussing two worldviews that are driving our culture in opposite directions. From the Median asks, which side of the road are you on? What direction do you want our culture to go? Tune in as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life. And now your host, Molly Smith.
Good evening and welcome to From the Median, where we are concerned with the middle ground, not just to understand both sides of an argument, but also to awaken the consciences of those who are neutral or indifferent to this, the greatest civil rights movement of all times, the pro-life movement. This evening, we continue our Bringing America Back to Life series. Tonight, we will feature a presentation from our 2024 convention. Our speakers' ideas will inspire you with principles, experiences, and wisdom as they join us to pave the way back to life through prayer, action, voting, and education. I am pleased to introduce to you Father Jason Chiron and Michael Kenny. Father Jason Chiron was ordained in the priesthood in the Ukrainian Catholic Church for the Diocese of St. Josephat in 2008. He is the pastor of Holy Trinity Ukraine Catholic Church in Carnegie, PA, and pastor of Our Lady of Perpetual Help in Wheeling, West Virginia. Father Chiron is spearheading the establishment of the Holy Protection of the Mother of God Shrine in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This monument is gratitude to Our Lady for the overturning of Roe v. Wade and will serve as reparation for the sins of abortion. In addition, the shrine will provide counseling, spiritual direction, retreats, and shelter for at-risk pregnant women. A museum honoring all of those who laid down their freedom and lived as witnesses to God's design for life is also planned on the grounds. Michael Kenny is a writer, producer, educator, and lawyer who has advocated for pre-born human beings and their families for over 40 years. He currently serves as the president of Pro-Life Partners Foundation. He practiced law for 13 years before holding various cabinet-level roles in Catholic higher education for nearly 20 years. His film credits include Unplanned and Pray, the story of Patrick Peyton. Michael has published numerous articles and co-authored In God We Trust, Morally Responsible Investing, the story behind the Pro-Life Mutual Fund with over $2.5 billion under management.
Glory to Jesus Christ. What do you think of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? What do you think of egalite, fraternite, equalite? People, you've been sold a bill of goods. What do you think of faith, hope, and charity? Yeah. You know, the pagan gods of antiquity, they offered beautiful things to people. You look at Baal. Baal was a fertility god. But what was the price that people had to pay? Death, child sacrifice. We see that in Jeremiah chapter 19, that the people who thought they were worshiping at the foot of a god of fertility were required to pass their sons and daughters through the fire to kill them, to appease that false god. And what do you think today? Do you think that same deity wishes us to come before him with a title of death, destruction, and disease? Or do you think he comes to us under a different title? I think he comes to us under a different title. And we think that we are getting life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, equality, fraternity. And what are we getting in return from the time of the French Revolution? No equality. No fraternity. No life. We have been sold a bill of goods. What is required, my friends, is that we perceive the events unfolding since the French Revolution through the eyes of faith in Jesus Christ. We cannot perceive the events that are unfolding as anything other than biblical events. And if they are biblical events, then they require from us a biblical response of faith, of divine faith. So when we see things like this, do you know what this is? What's this called? A curate. Do you know where they use this? Against our sons and daughters. And they rip them out piece by piece. But this isn't a curate. It's a liturgical instrument. You see, if you're drinking out of a cup here, it's a cup. You drink out of a nice glass, it's just a glass. But once you use that, as the bishops I know from Ukraine who were in the underground, once they use those cups, those glasses as chalices for the precious body and blood of Christ, guess what? It's no longer a cup. It's a chalice for the blood of Christ. It becomes a liturgical instrument. Do you see what I'm saying? And the same is true with this. We are looking at abortion as a cultural issue, as a social issue, as a medical issue. And we've been deceived. We are being inserted again into a spiritual form of worship. And these are liturgical instruments by which bloody sacrifice is offered to a demon, Baal. We have to put on scriptural eyes, the eyes of faith, to perceive the events that are happening around us. You know, at the first day of Lent, I'm Eastern Rite Catholic, Ukrainian Catholic. Pray for Ukraine. But I'm the first day of our Lent, we read from the first chapter of Isaiah. And I was praying it, and it jumped out at me. Because I probably, like you, I kind of wonder, Lord, why don't we have prophets? Why don't we have saints? Why don't we have wonders and miracles like we used to? You go back, I'm up from Canada originally. You go to Montreal and Brother Andre, and you look at all the beautiful, you know, crutches, the wheelchairs that are nailed on the wall. They were people who were healed. You've raised your hand if you've been to Brother Andre's Basilica in Montreal. And you know what I'm talking about. Lord, why don't we have this anymore? And so I'm reading first Isaiah chapter 1, and the answer is given to me. It's very clear there. Do you know what the answer is? He says that, you know, your Sabbaths, they're loathsome to me. Your incense is offensive to me. Why? You get to verse 15, verse 16 through 18, and he gives the answer. Because of innocent blood. Why don't we have miracles today? Because we've become complicit with innocent blood and the persecution against the widows, the orphans as well. We are living in biblical times, and that same innocent blood that the prophet spoke about, Isaiah, Jeremiah, is the same thing that we are facing today. It is a liturgical battle. Innocent blood. And that's what closes the divine faucet of grace. He turns from our prayers because we have turned towards Baal. You read on in Micah, that if you're really repentant, you know, shave your heads bald and mourn for your children. And then the people say to Micah in chapter 2, listen to this, don't preach with such impassionate rhetoric. You know, I have priest friends who can't preach with the passion that they want. They'll get reported. This is the mark of a prophet, is a prophet preaches with impassioned rhetoric. But we see that there's a response, and the response we see is in 1 Kings with Elijah. That in the face of Baal, Elijah understands how victory is brought about. And in the face of the false prophets of Baal, Elijah confronts fire with fire, altar with altar. And the false prophets of Baal, they do their thing. And Elijah, the servant of the living God, he does his thing. And fire comes down and consumes the sacrifice. And it's through liturgy that the living God is revealed. His anger is abated, and the grace of his from his throne room overflows us again. But our enemies, they perceive the spiritual nature of this battle better than we do. It's a callback to 2 Kings. We see that the Israelites were fighting against the king of Moab. And the king of Moab understands the spiritual principle that's at stake. Because when he's losing, he taps into that spiritual principle of blood. And he takes his firstborn son onto the wall of the city and sacrifices his firstborn son. This is something that perplexes a lot of biblical scholars, because what happens afterwards is that there was a spiritual torrent that the people of Israel could not withstand, and they fled. So there is a spiritual power that is unleashed in the shedding of blood. We use the shedded blood of the innocent firstborn son of God for good. But the evil forces, they use that same principle for evil, and it is blood guilt of our sons and daughters. During the pandemic of 2020, I talked about this during a... during a talk I gave, and what I had said was this: how do you people know that our enemies believe more in the power of faith than we do? And the answer was, at a court case in Arizona, the Satanic Temple took the state of Arizona to court for violating their religious rights. The religious right to which they were referring was that same religious right that the ancient Israelites practiced under Baal: abortion. Cosmopolitan, they get it. You know, that woman's magazine, the feminist magazine, the fashion magazine, they came out with an article shortly thereafter, and they articulated the position of faith that, yes, abortion is a religious ritual. So you see, our enemies, they get it. They get it. We don't. We're trying to fix this legally, culturally, politically, but we have to begin upstream and solve it spiritually. We have to fight fire with fire. And if they're going to use blood, we use the blood of the only begotten Son of God. That's why he gave us the liturgy. You know, if you read the writings from the pagans in the first century, a peculiar thing is revealed to us, that the pagan authors start speaking about something that happened. These are not Christians. These were the pagans. And they were saying that their prophecies, the pagan prophecies of the entrails of the animals that the Romans would use around the time of Christ's death, began to cease. Oh, the people would still do them, but the prophecies ceased. The power that came from it stopped. Interesting that the time in world history when the bloodless sacrifice of the Son of God is dispersed to the sons and daughters through their priests is the time when the pagan power of their imperfect sacrifices began to cease. And so I propose, brothers, sisters, that we take up the mantle of our forefathers, the great, from the beginning of Genesis until Revelation. Time and again, we see that it is a liturgical battle. We see this with Cain and Abel, that their conflict revolved around what? Sacrifice. One son offered good sacrifice and the other didn't. And we see this time and again with the patriarchs. They would go, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, out and do what? Build an altar and offer what? Sacrifice. What did Moses do in his battle against Amalek in Exodus 17? What did he do? Offered a sacrifice, a banner altar. What did the early Christians do? Again, evidence where they could go in homes. They would offer the sacrifice. And when freedom came, they would build altars and offer what? Sacrifice. And so it's time that we do the same. If we want to defeat this demonic death cult, and that's what it is. It is demonic. Things need to be called for what they are. It's a death cult, like Baal. It's promising us liberty, happiness, and life. But in reality, it's force-feeding us and our children death. Then if we are to do that, we are to offer, like Elijah, an altar against an altar. I had the great privilege early in my priesthood of celebrating a divine liturgy in front of the pagan altar of the Planned Parenthood facility in Raleigh, North Carolina. A brave priest set up an altar, Father Rick Rohr, Byzantine Rite, and he set it up, They had a little piece of public property there, and he offered the divine liturgy, the mystical sacrifice, for the closing of the doors of that church. That was 2008. Anyone know what happened to that place in 2010? Closed. Yeah. So it's raising an altar of sacrifice to the living God in repudiation of the false sacrifices that are being offered. And so I want to propose that we do the same. The time has come for us to put on the yoke of faith from the time of Abel, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, down through the apostles, throughout history, through the apparitions of Mary to her children throughout time. The request, there are 14 requests of Mary when she appeared over the past 2,000 years. And the request has been to build an altar that a sacrifice would be offered in reparation to her son for the outrages of men. And so we are no different. We are the same as our forefathers. We face the same temptations, and our enemy is the same, and our weakness is the same. But our strength, Christ, is the same. And so the remedy is the same. It's to offer up a national altar where we can say to God humbly and with contrition, we are sorry for our sins, for our complicity in the sin, and for the sins of our fathers. And this place, this altar, is an undoing of the cult of death throughout our nation. We heard from Stephen Mosher about how our government has been exporting death. We are imposing it upon children, the mutilation of their bodies, and soon, like in Canada now, the exporting it on our elderly. So the solution, my friends, is to build a place that is a center of reparation where we can say, this is a monument where we give our best. It's not just a thing where we say, this is a nice place that kind of symbolically expresses our sorrow. No. If it is a true sacrifice, it's a place where people will look and say, from 400 years from now, these people were serious about faith. They were serious about their contrition. Look at this thing. That's what we need to do. I want to propose some of these slides here. Here we have our Lord praying in the Garden of Gethsemane over the sins of the world that he was to take upon himself. And here is the shrine emblem that we have, that we would go before the Lord, like our Lord in Gethsemane, with the weight of sin of our nation upon our shoulders, and entrust this to the protection, the prayers of the protection of the Mother of God. Here is one of the renderings, a city on a hill. We see that this is something that, time and again, when you look at the great turning points in civilizational history, often enough they involve an architectural manifestation. You look at the great conversion of the peoples, and they build great cathedrals. Now, today, we build cinder blocks. Here's another rendering. And people say to me, well, why don't you just build a place for women to come? We do that as well. But everything is an outflow of faith. Everything flows from faith. Why don't you just change laws? And as I said earlier, you can, if you change laws, in 5 years you'll have the same problem. If you change the culture, in 5 years you'll have the same problem. We have to go upstream. If you change the hearts of the sons and daughters of our land, that changes the culture, which changes the politics, which changes the law, which changes finance, which changes everything. But it begins with right-ordered worship, a place of reparation. And it's not just for our sins against life at the beginning of the spectrum, but it's also for our sins throughout. You look at what's happening again in Canada with euthanasia. It's both ends of the spectrum. This is an attack on the image and likeness of God. You and you and you. And it doesn't stop with abortion. It continues full on. Here I have detail of the basement, and this is the second part of it. When we Orthodox and Catholics, Eastern or Western Rite, you know, when we make the sign of the cross, we begin up here. You know, we have evidence of that from the writings of Tertullian in the 3rd century. We begin up here that the faith, Christ would abide in our mind, in our heart, and in our hands. And so what I propose here is, and this is what I'm working on with this national shrine, is that we have a place of remembrance. You see, what I'm getting at is if you go into Barnes & Noble, if you go into any bookstore, you're going to find books in there on Ruth Bader Ginsburg for kids. Am I wrong? No. You're going to find books on there about Barack Obama, you know, the one who championed partial birth abortion when he was yet the senator in Illinois. But you won't find books on people like Mark Huick or people like that woman out in Idaho, you know, who when the doctor said, get your tubes tied after your first child because you have a small cervix, and she went on and had 10 more kids, you know. These are heroes, and we have to practice what our first fathers and mothers did in the church in the early patristic period, is they wrote the martyrology of these heroes. And today we know about St. Felicity and Perpetua, right? Because they wrote down these martyrologies so that through pen and paper, ink and paper, people could remember their heroic virtue. Today, we need to do the same for our heroes. We have no shortage of heroes in our country. And we need to concretize their heroic witness in a museum so that people can come in and say, that's what so-and-so did. And you have an outline of the pressures, the mind-crushing pressures that they and their families had to go through in order to proclaim the gospel of life. And we would also have in there heroes in faith, whether they're Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox, people who suffered and endured the beauty of the cross to proclaim life and liberty to those who were bound by sin. So heroes of faith, heroes of life, they go together. As someone who spent some time in the post-Soviet era, in 3 years I lived in the Soviet Union, I'm a married priest, my wife is from Ukraine, and 2 of our 7 children were born in Ukraine, is that the attack on family is synonymous with the attack on faith. That's the playbook of the communists. And what we're seeing here is the exact same thing to an unsuspecting audience. Arthur can tell you about that tomorrow. It's the same playbook. The devil is not creative. He doesn't possess creativity. He's a dullard, a bastard. And so he recycles the same tactics. Very few people realize that not only did the Soviet Union begin by legalizing abortion, it also began by redefining marriage. And it took children away from their parents, that they lived in communes, and people did whatever they wanted with whatever they wanted. It was so bad that by 1924, even Lenin had to say, enough of that. We have to go back to a man and a woman. Even Lenin. But we don't have that restraint. So we need to draw from the heroic witness of men and women like this and have a place of remembrance. We have monuments to the Vietnam War. We have monuments to all kinds of war dead. Where are the monuments to our dead from abortion? Monuments to the heroes of faith and family. They will be built, and their memory will be preserved for future generations. This is a rendering of the church, and 30 seconds and I'm done. James McCreary out of Washington, D.C., one of the foremost classical architects in the country, and people say, why do you have the Eastern domes on there? Because Jesus Christ repudiates things. He began at the north of Israel, and he worked his way down to Jerusalem. The north was the first to accept the pagans with the Assyrian Empire. And so abortion came to us from the east. And so the repudiation of that culture of death will begin with the jewel of the east, the light from the east, as John Paul II said. So that's why I've chosen for that style to be there. Glory to Jesus Christ.
Thank you, Father Sharon. We do have time for a couple of quick questions here before we bring up Michael Kenny. The first one says, growing up, my mother would say, when we were going through a tough time, offer it up. How come we don't hear that in our churches anymore?
Because the churches have ceased to believe in sacrifice and suffering. That's why.
Short and sweet and direct. This one won't be as easy. Father, when do you think abortion would be totally over?
I think it will be over when people realize that it truly is an act of worship to Baal, when people truly see it for what it is, when the mask is removed. It's not a medical practice. It's not anything else than a form of religious subservience to a fallen angel. I think people will cease once their eyes are opened. When the devil is successful, when he's able to hide his hideous form, he fails most miserably when his hideous face is revealed. And exorcism shows that. You know, even the most hardened opponents of Christ, when they see someone in the throes of possession, they become the most pious rosary clutchers that you will meet. So I think it'll happen when people see the religious nature of this battle.
I think a lot of people, this is a total personal follow-up here, but people's eyes oftentimes are open. They see the hideous nature of it, so they turn their head. Their eyes remain open, but they still won't look. That's our challenge, right?
Yes.
Father, thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being here, and thank you for the opportunity to Molly and your tremendous team. It's such a privilege for me to follow Father Sharon. He outlined the reality that we face, which is first and foremost, abortion is a profound spiritual battle. I represent an entity called Pro-Life Partners Foundation that came about just about 3 years ago, and the idea behind this foundation is to support the entire pro-life movement with movement-wide activities. So we're interested in a combination of subsidiarity, which is encouraging all the organic activity of the thousands of pro-life efforts, and also a degree of solidarity, so that to the extent that we can work together in a coordinated fashion, we'd like to facilitate that. In that spirit, a group of us met on the anniversary of Dobbs, and we conducted national surveys and strategized about what could we do as a movement in this post-Roe world. And from that came the decision that we could work as a movement on messaging. And I like to think of, the etymology of the word angel is messenger. You know, we've heard a lot about the spiritual warfare. So what I want to present to you today is just a very brief introduction to what will become a national campaign in about a month, a little bit before Mother's Day. We will release 11, in a sense, public service announcements that are pro-life, meant to address the culture. Some of this came directly out of the results of Ohio and the need to respond. And so we'll go through 7 videos very quickly, and then I'm happy to respond to any questions. There are 4 more that are in production, and all of that will be released. So you're the first major audience to see these, and it's a real privilege. Just by way of brief introduction, the commentators today have confirmed what you've heard this morning so eloquently, which is the basic norms of our country are falling apart. And so we are in a culture of death, and at least 3 of the profound pillars are atheism. We've got to cast off atheism. We are one nation under God. Abortion and Marxism. The culture of life is all about enabling Christ came that we may have life and have it to the full. Our motto is in God we trust. That has to become a natural dimension of who we are and how we speak. There's a wonderful man who about 12 years ago wrote an article about the connection between the great moral crisis of Lincoln's time and that of our time. And of course, they relate directly to the fact that our nation is the first nation to be founded on principles articulated in advance that are directly coming from God. So the first of the seven videos, equal protection.
America began as an idea, a set of principles, a people united by certain truths. We are endowed by our Creator with inalienable rights. We are created equal. We bear the image of God, and so we merit equal protection from the moment we exist through all stages of life. That's who we are. That's fairness. That's justice. That's America. We haven't always lived up to these principles, but because of them, we have a path forward. A century and a half ago, we added the 14th Amendment to ensure that never again would we fail to provide equal protection for all. Through the leadership of Harriet Beecher Stowe, Frederick Douglass, Abraham Lincoln, Booker T. Washington, John Bingham, Martin Luther King Jr., Mildred Jefferson, and many others, justice prevailed. But what about equal protection for those who can't speak for themselves? The littlest among us, the least among us. They too are entitled to equal protection. That's fairness. That's justice. Standing with mother and child, that's the 14th Amendment. That's equal protection for all.
The American pro-life movement is meant to be a brand that bridges the entire pro-life movement. The next video is entitled Abortion Hurts.
Here's the truth. Abortion hurts. She didn't anticipate the situation, but now she must make a difficult choice. She can choose abortion, which might feel like a solution in the short term, but it leads to an aching sense of loss, depression, and a risk of infertility. Because abortion hurts women. But she also has another choice. She can choose to be a mother. Being a mother doesn't hurt. In fact, it can heal. And being a mother is more beautiful than anything you can imagine. Of course, it's not an easy road. But there are people who will walk with you. Help you with childcare, healthcare, education, job training, even housing. You don't need abortion to succeed. You need support. We will connect you with the support you need. Go to standingwithyou.org. We will support you.
In Ohio, Molly and others informed us that a lot of disinformation was happening, including the notion that late-term abortion is not real. So this came from that.
According to Planned Parenthood, there is no such thing as a late-term abortion. Really? 7 states and Washington, D.C. permit late-term abortions. The CDC tracks late-term abortions. More than 10,000 late-term abortions took place last year, and some centers specialize in late-term abortions. But let's bypass the spin and call an abortion facility.
Hello, good morning.
I'm around 30 weeks pregnant. Do y'all offer abortion at 30 weeks?
Yes, we do offer abortion at 30
weeks. Is the procedure safe and everything? Like, do y'all do these a lot? I'm just a little nervous about it.
Yeah, it's totally understandable. Yes, we do that a lot. We have been a third trimester abortion clinic since the 70s.
Oh, okay. You specialize in later term abortions?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's correct.
So is the baby like going to be really big at this point, or is it fully developed or anything yet?
So yes, it would be the third trimester.
It doesn't have like a fully formed heart or head or anything yet, right?
At 32, it does.
Okay, and y'all are still able to do the abortion with the baby being that developed, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The truth, late-term abortion is real.
As many of you must know, now some estimates are more than 70% of abortions are happening through the abortion pill. The Biden administration is violating all sorts of laws by permitting these pills to be sent all over the country. And unfortunately, drugstores are now becoming abortion centers because of that. This video addresses that issue.
Abortion pills have been legal since 2000 and now make up for more than half of all abortions because they're being sold as the more comfortable solution. But abortion pills actually come with many complications and side effects, like severe pain, heavy and prolonged bleeding, fever, infection, and cramping. But these are just the complications that pro-abortion organizations mention. What they don't mention is that abortion pills can lead to blood clotting, described by one patient as the size of a lemon, incomplete abortions, which require a follow-up surgical abortion, pain, sometimes described as worse than childbirth, mental distress and a fear of dying, and in some cases, the abortion pill has led to death of the mother. This isn't hyperbole. So far, 24 women have lost their lives from complications with abortion pills. And get this, nearly half of all women who take the abortion pill seek medical attention after. That doesn't sound very comfortable or safe, does it? In spite of these complications, abortion vendors have fought to remove safety regulations and to disregard the research that says women have been hurt by abortion pills. But the truth is this, these little pills kill.
When I worked at Planned Parenthood as an RHA, we were told to mislead the women that came in looking for abortion pills. We were instructed to tell them the abortion pills were going to be easy, and we knew they weren't. Still, I was told to go to the grocery store and buy a lemon to show the women how big the clots would get. These women were experiencing intense pain, and they were afraid for their lives.
All of these videos are based on, as I mentioned, extensive research trying to reach different audiences. And we were fortunate to also speak to the unmarried men who are involved in this abortion dynamic. Monsignor Pope from Washington, D.C. said that if people would live virtuous lives, 85% of abortions would be eliminated overnight because 85% of abortions occur to single women. So this addresses that man.
When I was little, I would pretend to be a hero. My toy box was full of capes, fire trucks, and army gear. But now life is complex. But what makes a hero remains constant. A hero defies the odds. Stand strong. Does what's right, even when it's not easy, particularly when it's not easy. But when faced with an unplanned pregnancy, men are told we don't have a voice. But that doesn't feel right. Shouldn't we be there, help her, protect her? One day our sons and daughters will ask, "What did you do?" And we want them to know that we stepped up. We supported their mother. We became fathers, and fathers can be heroes when they do what's right, even when it's not easy.
This video is designed to help women realize that what they've been told by the extreme feminists, that you need abortion to advance your career. We are addressing the authentic strength of maternity. It's entitled, She Will Rise Above.
Women have a history of rising above. When they blocked our right to vote, we marched. When they paid us less, we secured equal pay. When they devalued us, we built a movement. Now they tell us we need abortion to succeed, that abortion is part of our empowerment. But there's no victory in ending the lives of our own children. There's no empowerment. There's only harm and loss. Abortion hurts. It leaves us with a giant hole in who we are. When someone tells us we are not up for the challenge of being a mother, let's remind them who we are, what we have overcome, how we have risen above. We don't need abortion to succeed.
And this is the last that I'll be showing today. Every pro-life person, all of you in the room, please become comfortable talking about the reality that abortion is unconstitutional. We were helped greatly a couple of weeks ago when the Alabama Supreme Court, now the highest court in the land, to declare that a human being, from the moment they exist, the moment of conception, deserves to be protected in that case under the wrongful death statute, regardless of where they're located, in utero or extra utero. The 14th Amendment was passed 3 years after the Civil War, and the whole purpose was to ensure that never again would our culture fail to live up to the natural law principle that you have the inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those principles are not dependent on government. Those come directly from God. Our country was set up that way. And all the scholars of any repute today are in agreement that the 14th Amendment applies to the preborn human being. So this is meant to help start that discussion and be very comfortable with it. Do not be intimidated by someone that says, well, that's not a person or whatever. Don't. Hopefully this will be a discussion starter.
Lincoln had been retired from politics for 5 years. What caused him to return? Legislation passed by Congress permitting the expansion of slavery into new states by simple majority vote. Lincoln saw through the smokescreen. This ignored inalienable rights. This eviscerated the Declaration of Independence. Beginning with his speech at Peoria in 1854, he would spend the next 11 years bringing attention to created equal. If those being denied liberty are property, as ruled by the Supreme Court in Dred Scott, then no cause for concern. But if human beings, then they are denied their inherent, inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It would require the best of Lincoln's gifts of persuasion, reason, and articulation to bring his fellow citizens to see the truth of the matter. In the end, the war came and Reconstruction followed, necessitating the 14th Amendment. The amendment's author, John Bingham, penned sweeping language. He sought a simple, strong, plain declaration guaranteeing equal protection, no matter how weak, how simple, no matter how friendless. From the moment we exist, we are endowed by our Creator. We are created equal. We have inalienable rights. And we are guaranteed equal protection, no matter how weak, how simple, no matter how small. That's the 14th Amendment.
I would like to ask you to really pray for this effort, and there are two ways that we want to go about this. We have the availability of the internet, which allows for certain little videos to go viral. Wouldn't it be wonderful if what makes a hero goes viral, right? And so When these are released, there will be a landing page. Pro-Life Partners Foundation has covered the cost to produce these public service announcements. And I'm begging all of you to go to that page, download these, and send them to your networks. We're working with all the pro-life organizations, of which there are thousands, and asking them to do the same. Our hope is that within weeks of these being released, we will have tens of thousands, millions of downloads, which will then enable us to approach benefactors and say, if we could also have some paid advertising, we can reach the 300 million Americans that need to hear these stories. These are all research-based and tested. The messages may not resonate with each of us the same way. They're designed to reach certain audiences. And so we hope that this is part of the solution. But as I say, the beginning requires prayer, and none of this is possible without that. So the Constitution provides the language that we need. The Declaration of Independence has the inspired language we need, rooted in God. And the same author that I mentioned reinforces this idea that there's no question that the Equal Protection Clause applies to the preborn human being. There were a number of decades where people were saying, well, you first have to show it's a person, and then if it's a person, then it's covered by the... Well, in a sense, that's true, but every human being is a person, and the author of the 14th Amendment made it very clear that this was meant to cover everybody. At the time it was passed, abortion was outlawed in the United States. So a lot of that is just a smokescreen that lawyers such as me tend to get caught up in. Interesting that St. John Paul II spoke in Detroit, September 19, 1987, 200 years to the day almost, 2 days off, of when the Constitution was passed. And this is what he said. That is the dignity of America, the reason she exists, the condition of her survival, yes, the ultimate test of her greatness, to respect every human person, especially the weak and most defenseless ones, those as yet unborn. As I say, that was 200 years almost to the day. The Declaration of Independence, which include the laws coming directly from our Creator, from God, will be celebrating 250th anniversary of that, passing of that 2 years from now. We're hoping this campaign builds up to a place where, as Americans, we can finally abolish in law this outrageous decision allowing for the killing of the innocent. So I'm pleased to answer any questions. It says 9 minutes on here. I don't know what that means exactly, but okay.
Yeah, we will have close to that. Thank you very much. Michael Kenney.
Thank you.
So you kind of answered the first three questions from the cards by telling us about the videos. How do we get access to these videos? More people need to see these. So you just answered that. But here's the third one, which I will pose. The question is, will the liberal media allow you to run these messages? And I think we could probably amend that to the liberal social media and the censorship complex that is there. Will we be able to send these things out to get thousands of views?
Yeah, so those are excellent questions. Thank you. I had the privilege of being part of Unplanned, and I gave a little talk at a little church in Chicago. They recorded it, and within a couple of months, nearly 500,000 people saw that little talk, and then we were the first victims of Jack Dorsey, formerly of Twitter, cutting us out. They shut down St. Mary's YouTube channel. So this is a reality. The concept behind Unplanned was to use Twitter as people came out of the theater, which our Twitter feed was exploding opening night, and Jack Dorsey shut down our Twitter feed that night. So these are real issues. But I would say there's going to be a landing page. We will be marketing through David B. Wright, who's speaking to you tonight, the best in the country for gathering the nation and webinars. So be looking for that. We're going to be asking Molly and others to send it out to all of you. And that webinar will explain the process to download and how to distribute. We hope to flood every social media pathway that exists, and we'll just have to face the obstacles as they come. But other than acknowledging the reality, we're ready to blanket the country.
Thank you. Next question is, do you have any recommendations for giving babies to loving adoptive parents from someone who was one of those lucky babies?
Yes. No, that's a video that we need to do as well. Adoption needs to become much more known and much better understood and facilitated. And so the four remaining videos, again, based on the research, are one is on motherhood and the beauty and strength of motherhood. One is on fatherhood. One is on responding to the difficult situation when someone is conceived out of an assault or crime. And the last one involves Melissa Odin and the Abortion Survivor Network and telling their stories. And so I'm going to ask that we add adoption as a 12th video. Thank you.
Thank you. Regarding the abortion pills, would it be effective to boycott all pharmacies that plan to dispense these, the CVSs, Walgreens, etc.?
Yes, absolutely. No, absolutely. And you had a wonderful leader here last year, Kristen Hawkins, with Students for Life. She is very effective at organizing those sorts of boycotts, along with other leaders, but when this was first being discussed, she organized students all over the country, and it slowed the process. I'm sad to hear that it came back, but we have to expect that. So, no, that's very important. It's sort of like the solidarity movement. You know, in Poland, they spoke, "We want God." That was the chant, "We want God," and they that's what we need.
The difficulty I can just conceive of is what pharmacies won't be carrying these, and if they all carry them, we do need access to prescriptions and other drugs and so forth.
Right. No, for sure. Hopefully there will be pro-life leaders that will step forward and offer alternatives. So, for example, the man I was quoting, Lewis Lehrman, he was the former president of Rite Aid, and to my knowledge, Rite Aid has not gone that direction. So I don't know. It's a complicated situation.
One last question. This is also about boycotting. Someone would like to know, do you think we should be drinking Pepsi because they are supporting abortion?
Yeah, no, my wife Mary Claire and I try to be attentive to figure out, you know, this book I had the privilege of being part of on the Ave Maria Mutual Funds. That's the whole idea behind those mutual funds, is that they are very careful to screen out Pepsi and all others connected to abortion, so you can be confident that if you have a retirement, you can put it in a mutual fund, that you're not in any way supporting the culture of death. And we need to do that in every way that we can. So,
wonderful. Thank you very much, Michael Cole.
Yeah, yeah.
You've been listening to Father Jason Sharon, pastor of Holy Trinity Ukraine Catholic Church, and Michael Kenny, a writer, producer, educator, lawyer, and 2024 presenters at the Bringing America Back to Life convention. Thank you all for joining me this evening. As I say goodnight and God bless each and every one of you, I'd like to close with the words of the Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel. There may be times when we are powerless to prevent injustice, but there must never be a time when we fail to protest.
From the Median is listener supported. Visit our website, fromthemedian.org, for further information or to make a donation to continue to make this radio program possible. Email us, radionews@fromthemedian.org, or call 440-668-4049. Through our fromthemedian.org website, you can download this or previous programs for your listening pleasure, or sign up to receive our weekly preview of upcoming guest interviews. Tune in every weeknight at the same time to listen to another great interview on From the Median as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life.
This program has been sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.